This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to We're Not Fucking Historians with myself, Hazel Hayes.
And myself, Shane Todd.
Still remote. Still on the old broken leg.
Very remote. Look, there's so much apart from today's topic that I don't even know what today's topic is. There's so much that we need to talk about. Yes, we're remote, but we nearly did get to do this together because I nearly ended up just living in London because
just
of the storm.
Just getting stranded here.
Venus.
So you were here for... So today's topic, by the way, is Oscar Wilde.
Okay.
Love that you just didn't know that. No. You were here for a gig in Leicester Square Theatre, no less, last week.
I am very at home in the theatre district of London. Chinatown, Soho, that kind of area might just be a bit of me. But yeah, I couldn't get home the next day and I was really hoping that we might have some listeners that maybe worked in Luton Airport, you know, that saw me hanging about the entrance to the lounge, and it turns out we don't.
Turns out we just have those couple of listeners in Turkey and Kenya. That's it.
Yeah, we've got listeners in Gatwick. We've got listeners in Heathrow, Southend, all the airports.
Fucking hate this podcast in Luton. Actively boycotting us up there, so they are. But yeah, so you were stuck because of, was it Storm Eunice? Was that the name of it?
Storm Eunice. And look, I've made the point before and I'm going to make it again. And this is one of those ones that, you know, they'll probably cut out of the episode. But can I just say, as a grown adult, if you get blown over by a storm, you're weak.
Shane, people died.
No, they know. But I mean, like the guys in like London city centre who are on their way to work and just get, you know.
Just fell over.
Just get put on their arse. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah.
I'll be honest. So I, for a couple of days of it, was just lording it about in my very high up apartment, laughing at all the little ants down below, struggling against the wind. I was like, ah ha ha, I don't need to leave my house because I'm a recluse. And then on the third day, I did actually need to leave the house. I was like, oh damn it, someone's watching me right now. I literally did that thing where you're walking up the road battling against the wind and you look like a mime. Like you look like you're joking and like leaning into it. And I was like, this might actually knock me on my ass, in which case that's going to be extremely embarrassing and Shane will disown me. It was
bad. The trick
is,
if you're walking against the wind, turn round and walk backwards.
Well, like in Tenet.
That's the trick. Don't worry about walking onto a road. Don't worry about anything like that. It's all with the wind stream.
Just trust your instinct. Just trust your instinct. Top of the O2 came off. That was fun. Got a text from my mother. Got a text from my mother in Dublin to let me know the top of the O2 had come off. Like, thanks,
Hazel.
But
Hazel, I wasn't playing the O2.
Hey-o! Well, you blew the roof off the Leicester Square Theatre.
No,
I don't know, that was an RD accent. I'm not sure what happened in the middle there. I turned into my grandmother.
Unfortunately, Leicester Square have said that the roof is structurally intact.
Very much intact.
Which is a kick in the
No, you were very good. It behooves me to say it, but it was a very good show. You did the parish proud.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a good time. We had some listeners there. It was all a lot of fun. But we're remote again. And that's fine.
We're remote again.
I like it when we're in different countries. It makes me feel like international, like the podcast international.
I like it when we're in different countries. For a whole other set of reasons.
Oh.
I never made you spit your tea out before. Right,
no.
So we'll be back in the studio next week, to my knowledge. I'll have my Titanic mug firmly in my hands. However, today we are talking about the one and only Oscar Wilde. I think I say the one and only every week, but most of them are the one and only of their kind. What do we know about Oscar Wilde, Shane?
I know that Oscar Wilde was... first and foremost, a writer.
Great. Secondly, I just did not know what you were going to say. Yeah, secondly,
I also know that he was gay.
Those are kind of the two things that you need to know about Oscar Wilde, I would say.
He was
Which
as
is sad, because it
out.
Shouldn't. It shouldn't have defined him, and yet it did, because of the time he was living in.
Yeah, imagine I said, first and foremost, he was gay.
I
and
really
then
thought
secondary,
you were.
He was a writer. I
he
know
also
he
wrote some stuff.
I know he's quite tall. He seems to be quite tall.
Very tall, yeah.
In my head, he's Stephen Fry.
I
he's
was literally, oh my God, I was about to say, and I'm sure we're not the first people to make this comparison, but the whole time I was researching and everything, and this was what I was thinking, this was nice for you, because you're always complaining that we don't have photos of people because they're from like the fucking Middle Ages. But yeah. we actually have pictures of this one. He's very like Stephen Fry. If we're to make the movie, it's hands down Stephen Fry playing him. I say that and I'm literally thinking, is there a movie where Stephen Fry plays him already? Have we missed the trick on that one?
From Sony Pictures Classics comes the first definitive film about the extraordinary life of Oscar Wilde.
You're an artist. Artists are always children at heart.
I think that the realization of oneself is the prime aim of life.
He looks a bit like, and I know people go, it's easy to judge, right? But that's why we do it. He look, Oscar Wilde, no disrespect, looks like he's been to Turkey to get the lips done.
He does a bit.
Yeah, he's had the hair
bit.
Done.
He looks his a little bit like he's had some work done, yeah, yeah.
I like the way he's dressed.
I like his style. He also put me in mind ever so slightly of Morrissey. And I realise we are just picking gay men here, but there's that thing of he decorated his dorm room in lilies and all that kind of stuff. And that reminds me of Morrissey for some reason.
He's got sweet hair and I like the way he's dressed. And I think if I do a couple more shows in London, I could very easily look exactly like this.
I would love if you did an entire set cosplaying as Oscar Wilde.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's only a matter of time.
So, we'll start at the start. He was born in Dublin, 16th of October, 1854. So we're in the middle of the 19th century. He has been called one of the first modern celebrities. I happen to think, and we'll get to this later, he was kind of like the OG influencer.
As in literally, like, was he knocking out some brand collabs back in the 1800s?
Yeah, like, he had H&M.
What's that big department store in Dublin near St. Stephen's Green? Brown Thomas?
I was going to say Arnott's. They're gone. Oh. Yeah, he did. He did a lot of collabs with Brown Thomas. Yeah, yeah. He had a lot of that kind of stuff going on. He also was kind of one of the first people that I have researched for this anyway, that was like famous for the sake of being famous. That like before he had really done anything, he was just kind of a socialite and was famous for that reason.
He was a man about town. Is that what you're trying to say?
He's a bit of a man about town. Yeah.
Bit of a character. I like that.
Oh, absolutely a bit of a character and kind of a bit of a shit. His full name is Oscar Fingal O'Flaherty Wills Wilde. I fucked it.
I mean, that just sounds like the name of like a hipster coffee shop.
Already, like it felt like his future was kind of set in stone. So his father is Sir William Wilde. He was a surgeon, a philanthropist. He also suffered from terrible bouts of depression. His mother, Lady Jane Wilde, she was an Irish nationalist poet. She wrote under the pseudonym Speranza, which means hope in Italian. And she likes to claim that she was descended from Dante and had been an eagle in a previous life. So we can see where it all started for Oscar. You know, it all starts to come into place.
When you say Dante, can you just confirm for me and probably about three other people listening, you don't mean the Brazilian centre-back and former Bayern Munich player Dante?
Alas, no, not the Brazilian centre-back. Though if you want for the rest of this podcast to imagine it was, please, please be my guest.
So he comes from money, that's what you're telling me? He comes from
money and madness, which is pretty much how this story is going to go. It's fairly obvious from a young age, he's a bright kid, he's a clever kid. He's talkative, he's funny, and he's not particularly popular at school. His older brother was much more popular than him. So he kind of uses that charm. He's telling stories, he's making jokes to kind of get people on side. I feel like you're relating to him already. You're nodding your head there like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could be talking about me, except I didn't have an older brother.
And you weren't a genius.
Well, in ways.
In some ways. So he's fluent in French and German. Not Irish. Rude. He was translating Greek and Latin texts from like a young age, nerd. He's basically, he describes himself as a bit of a prodigy, which is difficult because once again, it's someone's own version of their own story, which I'm disinclined to believe for that reason. But he did seem very, very intelligent. He went to Trinners.
Obviously. Even I don't know a lot about Trinity. I know it's like a top uni down south, but is it, would that be compared if it was English to like Oxbridge? Is it like top level,
yes,
sort of thing?
Which right. He also went to.
Why so, was he spending, did he class. Just love freshers fairs? Like why was the guy
he
just.
He must have been mad
just lapping up USB sticks.
Clubs and socks.
Yeah.
Living it up at every student ball. This is the thing though. This is what we're seeing from very early age. It's he is really intelligent and academically he does very well, but he's more into the social side of things. It's all about the appearance of it.
Yeah, I don't like him.
You don't like him? Okay, great. No, I love just, it. Come in hard with an opinion straight on. I like it. Now I have to work against that.
Just at this early part, it's the fact that, do you know what really, really pissed me off about
what?
Him? That he was translating texts.
Yeah.
You know, from like yeah. other, unless that's a homework, don't be doing that.
Ah, like they asked him to. I don't know that he was doing this off his own bat, but still.
Yeah, it makes it sound like, you know, they're like at lunchtime, they're like, hey, Oscar, you know, come play football, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's going, I would love to, but I'm translating this from, you know, Latin
fucking
to
Latin. Yeah,
Belgian.
And then there were stories of him like being able to read entire volumes of books in an hour or two and then recite the whole synopsis of the book and the dialogue. And like these were... It was almost like a party piece that he would do while he was at Oxford, I think. Like he would...
Oh, that's not a party I want to go to.
No. They loved it. They absolutely loved it. So yeah, so he goes on to Oxford. He got a scholarship and he went there. And while he was there, he decorated his rooms with peacock feathers, lilies, sunflowers. He once talked about painting the ceiling gold. I don't know. I guess they wouldn't let him. Landlord wasn't keen. But... He was very eccentric. Like, just you can just see straight off the bat, it's all about the appearance of things.
It sounds like this guy has not enough hours in the day. Like, what does he chill? Yeah. Does he ever just chill?
Like, it's weird because it seems like he's a professional chiller.
Right.
You know?
Right, okay.
You know those people?
It's style over substance at this point.
Yes, he's a professional loafer. Did you know these people? Like, I knew this person in college. I think we've all met one of these people somewhere along the way. Do you know who he reminds me of is, and this is terrible. Oh my God, I forget his surname. Jamie from Made in Chelsea, the really blonde one.
Jamie Lang,
that's the one. He reminds me of him. Like in the film, it's either Stephen Fry or Jamie Lang playing him.
Stephen Fry, Jennifer Ely, Wilde.
Well, they could play him at different parts of his life.
Oh my God, they could.
Yeah,
I like that. Do the little proper biopic thing and have like the early life. And yeah. Good. We've cast that movie brilliantly.
Great.
So after he graduates from Oxford, he goes back to Dublin. And this isn't a huge plot point. I just thought it was interesting. He meets Florence Balcombe, who we know as the wife of Bram Stoker. And they spent 2 years together, herself and Oscar. Now, he's not out as gay yet. And... he apparently was madly in love with her. And after the 2 years, they broke up and he was devastated. He sent her a letter saying they were just the sweetest years of his life. Very lovely, and wished her well, and said he was probably going to return to England for good, which he did in 1878. And then he only came back to Ireland twice for the rest of his life after that. He basically just
came back for a letter picnic.
Yeah. Just came back for the picnic in the summer, you know yourself.
Just came back for oxygen to see the Foo Fighters, and that was it.
I didn't see the Foos at that, and I'm raging. I'm still raging. I wish I had.
I've never been to a festival.
That doesn't shock me, even in the very slightest.
Oh, yeah, man. It was all muddy, and everyone was just in the mud. Hey, highlights are probably on TV. I'll watch it at home.
How did you become a granddad at such a young age? Like, I just don't know what happened.
No, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, speaking of, ironically, Oscar Wilde, like, I had some wild times, but I don't like to get dirty doing it. You know, I don't like the idea of mud. Someone just threw a pint into the crowd. Well,
yeah.
I hate that, and I don't ever want that to happen, and that person should be sentenced to prison and not have a great time. Yeah.
Great.
Or death.
Weird that you say that. We're going to come back to that later. So, off he goes back to London. He became known... for being a bit of a lad. So yeah, he gets a bit of a name for himself, but still not yet for writing, for doing the thing that he really wants to do. So he begins to publish poems. He had been writing poems throughout the years through college and publishing them in magazines and that kind of stuff. So in 1881, he's 27 now, he publishes his first collection of poems. It is not well received by the critics. And this becomes a bit of a pattern for a while. Again, I didn't realize. I thought like, oh, he's just a genius and everyone loved him. People did not love him. And they actually didn't think that his writing was that good at the time, at least up until a point.
Which is fair, because poetry's wet.
You just insulted an entire subset of people and like...
Fine. There's probably 12 good poets working at the minute.
Name them.
And they are good. But there's a lot of bad poetry.
Yeah, name those ones as well.
The good ones are Dr. Seuss. Is he good or is he problematic? I feel like he was problematic.
Dr. Seuss was a woman. I'm ending this line of conversation here. This is absolute madness. Absolute madness. You're going nowhere. You're just going to insult a bunch of people and be wrong. Which is all this podcast is, really. Let's be honest.
I don't know. This is probably controversial to say. I think the best rapper of all time, little guy called Tupac Shakur. Don't know if you've heard of him.
Okay. Before you dig yourself further into that hole of slagging people off, I think we should take a little break there. Come back after these messages.
Yeah, I don't want to be in the hole in the coal. Poetry.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Have you ever wondered what happened to all those space age promises that previous generations thought we'd have by now? You know, heading out for the day on your own personal flying cars, or working on a space hotel somewhere in the far reaches of our solar system. Where are all those amazing inventions? Well, we're here to find out more on my new podcast, Where's My Jetpack? I'm Sarah Crudis, space expert, TV host and author. Join me and Luke Moore every week as we look into retrofuturistic tech that never was to decide whether it's still just science fiction or if some of these discoveries are actually a lot closer than you think.
I think we're very close to that happening on an even more regular basis. And what I think is interesting about that, too, is that's going to make the accessibility of getting to space available for more and more people.
So if you've ever wondered whether we'll one day speak to aliens light years away, or you'll be flying to work on a jetpack, this is the podcast for you.
Think of the car parking spaces. They need to be massive.
No,
really,
the wings can fold up.
Well, they don't exist.
No, some of the cars which were designed had wings which folded up.
Are you happy getting in a plane knowing the wings fold up?
Yeah. All right. I trust engineering.
Trust the science.
Search Where's My Jetpack on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where's My Jetpack is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Welcome back to this podcast on Oscar Wilde, who currently is not doing very well.
I mean, part of me likes his attitude. I like he has a taste for the finer things in life.
I like his gumption.
He seems to me like a bit of a spoofer. Like, at this point, I'm thinking, how seriously is he even taking the writing?
Which is weird, because I think he's taking it extremely seriously, but no one else is taking him seriously. So around this point, he basically becomes the poster boy for aestheticism. Aestheticism being a movement around that time, which essentially was sort of saying that art should be art for art's sake. It could just be entertainment, and it didn't necessarily have to have any deeper moral values, that sometimes it was just nice for something to be beautiful or entertaining.
You're preaching to the choir here.
He's becoming a bit of a poster boy for this, but at the same time, he's being ridiculed for it. And a play is written about this. It's like a satire on aestheticism, but it's very clearly about Oscar Wilde specifically, and they're completely ripping the piss out of him.
It's about a guy called Oscar Wilde. They're like, it's nothing to do with you.
That would have been a very good name for it. Alas, it was called Patience by Gilbert and Sullivan. But what happened was, he was invited on this tour of North America, wherever the play was showing, as a kind of a press tour. Like, it was almost like he was going out to sort of prep the audiences for what aestheticism is and what he's like, so that the play would be even funnier and more relevant to them.
Is that a little bit like someone being like, oh, we're doing a play about complete dickheads here, Shane, would you come and do 20 minutes at the start? And I go, oh, do you want me to like talk about the play? They're like, no, just say your normal stuff.
It is a lot like that. He gets back to London. He's introduced in 1881 to Constance Lloyd, who is the daughter of Horace Lloyd. He is very, very wealthy. She is also very, very wealthy. He proposes, as you would. He's sort of running out of money at this point. He marries Constance in 1884, and they have two sons, Cyril and Vivian, over the course of the next couple of years. He basically bankrupts her decorating the house. For a start, they get this gorgeous little house. She's earning a little income from her dad. She's doing very well, very affluent. It's around this time when life is actually, for the first time, becoming a bit more conventional and a bit more relaxed, that he starts becoming interested in very, very young men. The first, or at least one of these, is a teenager named Harry Marillier. Wilde is obsessed with him. And this becomes a bit of a pattern. He starts to just become infatuated and obsessed with a lot of very young boys and men of age also. This starts to become a theme in his work, this sort of duplicity of like being the dutiful husband and the stable guy, and also having these yearnings and longings and wanting to act on them. And this is particularly evident in The Picture of Dorian Gray.
If only the picture could change and I could be always what I am now. For that, I would give everything. There's nothing in the whole world I would not give. I would give my soul for that.
The vain jealousy which prompted Dorian Gray to utter this fateful prayer was destined to sweep him into a life so fraught with vice and evil that its marks became horrible to behold. For the mad wish of Dorian Gray was granted through some supernatural miracle.
Reviewers immediately criticized the novel. It was all about decadence and homosexual tendencies, and people were not happy. No bueno, you might say, Shane. No bueno.
No bueno.
They were not happy about this. So Dorian Gray comes out.
But Oscar Wilde doesn't.
I mean, he does and he doesn't. Like, everyone fucking knows. He's not being discreet about what's going on behind his wife's back.
There's a touch of Barry Manilow about this.
There is a bit. There's a touch of every gay man who's been in the limelight and been attacked for it, and it's sad. And at the same time, he's, you know, conducting affairs behind his wife's back. And a lot of these are with very young boys as well. So like, for that reason, I'm out. If we're on Dragon's Den, shock and Shane. But also, he shouldn't be being attacked for being gay, but the affairs and the underage stuff, not okay. So that's where that's where it's kind of murky and confusing. After this, he moves slightly off of prose and into plays. Lady Windermere's Fan was put on in 1892. Extremely popular, toured the country for months. He made a lot of money off it. Following that was A Woman of No Importance. So he's kind of starting to build back a reputation for himself in the arts. Then in 1891, he meets a guy called Lord Alfred Douglas. He does not help the situation. He's an undergraduate at Oxford, and he's known to his family and friends as Bosie. He's a very handsome, very spoiled young man who I'm sure reminded Oscar of himself, and a very intimate friendship began between the two of them. By 1893, Wilde was completely infatuated with this kid, and they began a very, very public, very passionate affair. They weren't even trying to be quiet about it. The other thing that happened was that this Bosie guy sort of introduced Oscar Wilde to the Victorian underground of gay prostitution. And so Wilde then goes on many adventures with many young working class male prostitutes. Everybody knows about this. It's the talk of the town. It's not quiet. It's not secret. Bosie's father, not best pleased. So he confronts Oscar Wilde about it and, you know, says the relationship absolutely has to stop, and they have no intention of stopping it. Around this time, The Importance of Being Earnest comes out, which is pretty much considered Wilde's masterpiece. This is the one that's really stood the test of time. And that was first performed in 1895. He's doing well for himself. Things are going good. You might like to just sort of leave it there and say he was fine. Shall we?
It's the stuff about, because you said, you know, he went out and had a lot of adventures before you mentioned on the underage male prostitution scene. When you said he had adventures, I was seeing him at, like, you know, Thorpe Park, Alton Towers, all these places. But is he, like, so, I mean, you're an author, right? So you know more about writing, you know more about this kind of thing than me.
Sure.
Most people know about this kind of thing more than me. Is he considered more of a writer, like an amazing writer, or is he considered more of a character? Is the myth about him, does that outweigh his talent, do you think?
There was a bit of both happening. So in certain circles, he was talked about a lot and looked down on. And then I'd say there was probably a lot of people just consuming his work who didn't know. You know, the play is just touring the country and people are going to see it and probably had no clue. And this is the point at which, now that you say it, actually, his friends are sort of starting to say, maybe no?
Yeah.
Maybe chill out a bit. So this kid's dad is infuriated about the whole thing. He turns up at this club that Wilde used to frequent, and he leaves a card that simply says, "For Oscar Wilde, posing sodomite." It doesn't actually say that because there's a typo on the card itself that said posing sodomite, but he tried his best. I mean, we knew what he was trying to get at.
Now, do you think he got that in Clinton's, or do you think he's made that himself?
I'd like to think it was a little handmade number. Yeah, yeah. I like to think he really took his time over it. A bit of calligraphy.
Yeah, he's not picked that up at a service station on the way there.
No, it's not quite a Hallmark caption, is it?
Although in those times, possibly.
You just insert the name.
Yeah.
Wilde should have fucking left it. Shouldn't have said anything. His friends all said, leave it be, leave it there. Don't take the bait, you know, just don't get involved in that. But instead, he decides to sue this kid's dad for libel, because it amounted to a publicly written statement about him. So he decides to sue him for libel. And again, everyone's saying, don't fucking do this, because it's an extremely dumb move. Because under the 1843 Libel Act, Queensberry, who is, P.S., famous for creating a set of boxing rules, which...
Queensberry rules?
It's that guy.
That's the only way I fight. That's just a side note. We don't have to explore that.
Same, but a bit of hair pulling. A little bit of scratching. So he could go to jail for like a couple of years for libel. And the only way that he can avoid that is by proving that what he said was true. So essentially, Wilde has invited this man into his life to go, fine, prove it. And it's so easy to prove because he's, again, being very public. So this guy hires private investigators and all sorts of stuff to follow him around and get proof. And Wild is completely up shit creek. He gets sent to prison in May 1895. And it wasn't very nice, Shane.
Where did he go? In England?
Yes, several different prisons.
For how long? Like, are we talking months?
He was in prison for years. He was in prison for, I think, two years. 1895 to 1897.
Oh, wow.
He was treated like the scum of the earth. He didn't have a bed. It was just like a fucking blanket on the floor, like a hard bed. He was forced to walk on a treadmill for 6 hours every day, like just pointlessly. They had to do labor. He didn't even have books to read. He didn't have a pen and paper to write. And he got very, very sick in prison as well. He got an ear infection. He was just, you know, I imagine he was one of those poorly sickly kids as well. You know, he came from luxury. He was used to the nicer things in life. He did not fare well in jail. He was very, very sickly and got moved around a lot.
But what, to be fair, walking 6 hours a day on a treadmill, the kid must have been in shape after that.
You would think, wouldn't you? But he just got in worse and worse and worse shape. He just sort of fell apart. He just fucking fell apart in there. And at one point, and I found this funny only because of the way the website described it. At one point, his wife, who was like, I guess, just gritting her teeth and trying to get through this whole thing, she visited him in jail to let him know that his mother had died. And even though they'd never formally divorced, she changed her surname back to her maiden name. And the children's names as well, because she just didn't want them caught up in this whole thing. But what's really funny is the website that I found this on, the headline on this section is, "That's cold."
Yeah.
Is it? He's really fucked her about.
Yeah.
I like, sparing the children this horrid abuse from the public is probably not, I don't think it's that cold.
But would he have been a celebrity at that time? But would prisoners have known who he was? Like,
I would imagine so. He was a celebrity. Like, as I said at the top, like he was kind of the original celebrity, modern day celebrity. People knew who he was, and I can't imagine he was treated very well. Even as he was being moved between prisons, you had the public would turn up and literally fucking throw shit at him and spit on him, and he was just treated like the absolute scum of the earth. And from there on in, it's basically just really, really sad. That's it. He's let go eventually. He's got no money left. He goes back to his wife begging forgiveness, and she helps him for a little while. But then he goes back to this kid, Douglas, and picks up that affair again. That doesn't last very long. He leaves him. And then he basically spends his last 3 years. I think he's in Paris at this stage. He had to leave England because it was so bad for him here. And he just lives in exile in poverty for a couple of years till he gets really sick of meningitis and dies.
So what age, like roughly, was he an old man when he died, or was he still pretty young?
He died in November 1900. And then, I mean, this isn't massively helpful, but a slightly more hopeful end. In 2017, Oscar Wilde was among an estimated 50,000 men who were pardoned for homosexual acts that were no longer considered offences. That's not fucking helpful, is it? 2017?
No. Yeah.
Man's been dead since 1900. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, even if they'd done it in 2016, it's still way too late.
Yeah.
I wonder, was there a different attitude towards him in Ireland compared to England? Like, did Irish people love him, or did they see him as like a betrayer because he'd left?
The interesting thing is what happened afterwards, because you then had the Irish and the Catholics and all sorts of different sort of groups of people talking about Oscar Wilde, but not mentioning any of the stuff that they considered to be untoward. So for a long time, Ireland talked about, you know, their wonderful playwright and writer and poet, Oscar Wilde, and what a genius he was and what a mastermind he was, but just left out all the other stuff because they didn't want to be associated with that. So it's interesting what people have kind of picked and chosen over the years.
Well, I feel like I know 99% more about him than what I did before, because the only thing I knew before was that he was tall and he was gay. But I've got bad news about him. I don't want to end this episode on a bad note.
It's a sad note. Go on.
They already have made a film, and Stephen Fry played Oscar Wilde.
Fuck off.
And let me tell you this. Do you want to have a stab at who played his wee mate, Bosie?
If it's Jamie Lang, I'll give you 100 quid.
I wouldn't say he looks too dissimilar, but I'd say this film's slightly older. So I reckon just by looking at the thumbnail for it, it was made 10, 15, 20 years ago.
That's
so
easily the 90s, isn't it?
Think of a young English actor. Good, young classically English good-looking, quite posh.
Hugh Grant?
Same ilk, but maybe a bit younger.
Colin Firth? No, he's older. Oh, I don't know.
Jude Law.
Jude Law! That's great casting.
That's
I'm
really
thinking
good
of the
casting.
Picture in my... Yeah, because there's a photo of Oscar Wilde and Douglas together. And I can fully see that as them. Yeah, that's very, very... Oh, man, that already got made.
Yeah.
Well, we cast that very well in that case.
Well, like, reboots are all in at the minute, so we could definitely just reboot that film.
I think we should.
But we keep Stephen Fry in, but the earlier version of Oscar Wilde's played by Jamie Lang. And then I'll play Bosie. I'll play that guy.
Nice, 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 nice. Shall I be the poor wife?
Yeah,
Who just gets absolutely heartbroken. Poor old Constance.
Who gets heartbroken, visits him in jail to give him some bad news, and then people are like, oh, she roasted him so bad.
What a bitch.
All right, well, look, we have some correspondence. We have some emails. Before I read them, hello@nothistorians.com. If you do want to email us anything, an episode you want us to cover, something we already have. I've got an email from Lana, which may be short for Alana, which says, I'm an archaeologist who loves your podcast, especially the recent prehistory episode. Yes, these are my people. A fellow archaeologist.
Yeah.
I also CBA with the digging and work with the finds from excavations rather than being in the field. But just wanted to say the digging to finds ratio can actually be really high. I work with ceramics and you often get tons from large excavations, though I don't work with a lot of prehistoric stuff where the ratio can be a bit lower. I love that Lana's like, fuck the prehistoric stuff.
Yeah, she's not
Lana
into it
only
at all.
Lana's only from 2000 onwards. She says, unfortunately, I can't send you any of our bones from the collection, Jane.
Aww.
Bear, this is just reminding me that
you
asked for
a bear bone. You fully asked for a bear bone.
Bear skeletons can actually look a lot like human skeletons, and the first Neanderthal remains were mistaken for a bear at first. So if Shane did have them in his house, he might get a bit creeped. Lana, less creep than you think. So do send me those bear bones because I want them and I don't care if they look like human bones. I don't care if they might be human bones, but I appreciate that actual archaeologists are getting in touch. Thank you for that.
That's amazing. See, this is the thing. Like when you slag off poets and shit, I'm like, there's actual poets listening. There are actual archaeologists listening, Shane. It's not just the two of us in our rooms anymore. There are human beings hearing this and they may be upset.
Dig up another email for us, Hazel.
Okay, I've got one from Lewis. Lewis Donnelly, who has been back in touch. We've already heard from Lewis Donnelly before. He loves it. Welcome back. Thank you, Lewis. He said, Shane mentioned on the podcast there's a patron saint for everything. Well, I know of one he might be interested in. Saint Lawrence is the patron saint of comedians.
Oh, yes.
Imagine
love
that.
This. I've never
he
heard
was
of
martyred.
This.
He was martyred. Oh, fuck. He was martyred by being tied to an iron grill and held over a fire. And you're going to love this bit. While this was happening, he told the soldiers they could turn him over because he was cooked on one side.
Oh, I bet you as well. When he was dying, he said, guys, not the first time I've been involved in a roast.
Lewis ends by saying, I'm sure they all had a good laugh, then awkwardly went back to slowly killing the man. Yep. Presumably so.
Someone sent me a St. Lawrence cross or something, some sort of jewellery and bare bones. I'd like that. If you want to get in touch with us, we're on socials at The Hazel Hayes or at Shane Todd or Shane Todd Comedy. Use the hashtag WNFH for this podcast if you're talking about it and anything. Tell friends, rate and review the podcast if you can, or email us hello@nothistorians.com. We've been Hazel Hayes and Shane Todd. Hazel, great episode on Oscar Wilde.
Thank you. Sorry, this one was more fact heavy than crack heavy, but we'll be back with lots of crack next week.
And that is a fact. Remember, until next time, Hazel.
We're not fucking historians. See you next Tuesday.
We're Not Fucking Historians is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.